Hey guys, welcome to Verbal Shenanigans. This is Howard Berger, makeup effects genius to the stars with K&B Effects Group. We're going to talk about a bunch of cool stuff from my past, present, and hopefully future.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
All right, hello everybody. Long time no see, Berlo. It's another week, another, you know, it's not even a week. It's been 4 full days since we last addressed America. We addressed our listeners in Sweden, Ethiopia, and wherever else we get massive listening. So, welcome back, everybody.
I'm addicted to the podcasting, Scott. I tried to get out. I joined a group. I got my 3-day chip, but I just relapsed. I'm sorry. I couldn't stay away. I'm sorry. It's too addictive.
It is what it is, right? We are, we're home. It's cool to put out more content. It's like during normal times, bro. Like, you know, it's hard sometimes to even get our once a week things out and get everything out and Instagram posts and things edited. But during this time, it's like, yeah, well, why not? It's like something I look forward to. Like, oh, tonight I get to do something. You know, I get to not look at my wife all day long in a room. You know, it's nice. Yeah. Now I get to look at you through a virtual room.
Yeah, this kind of thing that's happening to the world really proves the whole, did you really mean in sickness and in health till death do you part? Okay, you keep on saying it, you married couples. But let's really put it to the test, okay?
Yeah, a pandemic is the ultimate test of marriage, I think, is we've been pretty good. I think we only argued twice so far in the pandemic, which is like 3 weeks home, so that's not bad.
That ain't shabby. I'm trying to think if I had like a real, I think maybe, I know once with Izzy. I can't even remember specifically. I know it, like voices were raised, but I think, yeah, I think it's only been one. So
twice for me. One like a 6 out of 10, and then one was just like a two. So
just in like one of those. All right, you're bugging me a little bit. Let's calm it down.
Exactly. And like you're being annoying. Like let me do my thing. Okay. And 2 seconds later, we're like eating dinner together, or whatever. But if you guys are tuning in, this is Verbal Shenanigans. We are ticking. It's funny because last year there was a couple weeks where we couldn't do the cast. Like things were just getting busy and kind of out of control and we had a couple off weeks. Now this year we're going to be going over the amount of cast for the year. So we're evening it all out, but we are creeping towards episode 300.
I mean, our podcast auditors called us up. They looked at the reviews for last year. They saw holes in it. They said we owe them. So, you know, we're just making up for lost time and all. We don't want to be in debt to the government for missing podcasts.
That's it. And we try to bring the promises to the people that we, you know, we always say we're going to give you 52 podcasts a year. And they're like, we need 50 fucking 2 podcasts a year. And we make it happen.
Absolutely. I mean, there's no exceptions to the rule. It doesn't matter what date Monday falls on, you know. Some people are like, well, it's Thanksgiving, and it's like, no, it's Verbal Shenanigans week.
Right.
Yeah, but I'm going out on my honeymoon. That's nice, but it's Verbal Shenanigans week, Mr. Berlew. You better get that content out.
This is where it might be a problem for people, because now that we're releasing like Monday, Thursdays, like if it does fall on Thanksgiving, people are really going to have to make some adjustments in their schedule.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't care if the pandemic ends on Thanksgiving Thursday, you still got to listen to our podcast before you do any celebrating. I demand it. If you are not all at the Thanksgiving table talking about our latest episode, there's going to be hell to pay.
Right. Like we want to be in that prime time slot right after the prayer that no one cares about, like grace. And eating starts. We want to be right between there. Like, before the main course comes out, but but like Grace where the soup or something stupid's out. We want to be in in that part.
Exactly. We want to be the thing that gets you through that nasty appetizer, that like that creamy jello thing that somebody always brings that you know they just grabbed the first thing in the supermarket.
Or like kind of deals. Like rolls and butter. Like, come on, get this out of here. I want like the potatoes and the turkey and everything else. Like, come on, let's be done with this.
This is preventing real food, what you're putting out there. So if we chat verbal shenanigans, we're going to have nothing but good stuff to eat.
Right. Like when Seinfeld would have his prime in that like 8, 9 o'clock slot on NBC, like that's where we want to be as far as the Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah, we don't want to be the 8:30 slot. We don't want to be Suddenly Susan and all those shows that they kept on saying, no, no, this is just as good as Seinfeld and Friends. And you keep on saying that's cute for like 2 weeks, but now you really got to think about a real show in here.
Oh, God. So hopefully all you guys out there are you're staying healthy, you're staying home, you're doing your thing, and you're finding some positivity in the pandemic. I don't want to come on here and be like, you know, it's miserable, it's upsetting, and wow, Mike's standing up and showing me his groin. Yeah. Interesting. All of a sudden, he just rose, and I saw like a really intimate shot of him and his groom Disney shirt. So it must be laundry day at the Berlew house.
No, it's nobody's going to see me. So I just grabbed the first thing that's available. As for what I just did, the cat was up on like our little space heater where we got some of my sports knickknacks.
Right.
Like my Philly Fanatic, Mr. Met bobblehead. And my LeVar Arrington, one of those, remember those starting lineup little figurines? Yeah, they're up on there, and I knew the cat was ready to just knock one down, so I had to kind of give her the little shoo-shoo.
You had to save the important stuff, is what you're saying.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I know you were talking about important stuff. I had to say my own things.
But guys, thank God LeVar Arrington's figure is safe. So we can all move on now.
That thing is going to shoot up in value one day. It's going to be like 2040. And everybody's like, oh, you remember the great Penn State college days? And I'm like, oh, do you?
A lot of people are like,
$5,000.
Who the hell is LeVar Arrington by those days? But so, yeah. So we hope you guys are tuning in, doing something creative, being, you know, taking time to maybe do some things you put off. Berlew, how are you doing in pandemic life as far as, I don't know what we're on, week 3, week 4, something like that. How is your mental shape going? How are you?
I'm managing, I would say. Georgia just announcing that they're going to do shelter at home. They're Georgia. Doing it. Yeah, it's a weird setup. Number one, it starts Friday. They only made it for 10 days, even though the national shelter at home is like till the 30th.
Right.
And our governor kind of announced, he's like, oh, nobody knew that even though you don't have signs, you might have the virus and be spreading it to people. And it's like, well, we kind of knew this for about a month right now. I don't know where you're getting your info from, but yeah, that's kind of big stuff. You know, we're kind of managing. We are over on Zoom. Izzy has a former instructor in New Jersey. He does like half an hour sets every day. So we do the 6 o'clock workout with him. We try to get some walking, running in pretty close to every day outside of my podcast days. I did one more run to the supermarket yesterday. I was pleased with the stuff in there. There's still no toilet paper or disinfectants I can find out there, but we're still fine in that category. It's just I was hoping for the little buffer there. But.
Yeah. We're good. I found I found toilet paper. There's been like a 4-pack. Every once in a while, I just pick one up. But the stores are really interesting. Like, I just don't like the grocery store, man. It's the one thing I start to get a little weird about it. I'm like, when I go, I spend a lot of money because I try to limit, you know, wait as long as I can until I have to go again, until we actually really need stuff. So, like, I go to, like, Trader Joe's just opened up in my town maybe, like, 6 months ago. We love it. That's, like, our favorite store to go to. And I do the shopping, but, like, today even, like, you go, and I'll say they do a really good job, taking care, but just the sight of it is, like, wow, like, this is America, like, right now in 2020. Like, what's going on? Like, they have all outside. They took all shopping carts and, like, put them on their side. Like, and they formed like a walkway basically, where there'd be a line, and on that there's every 6 feet they spray painted a line, so you wait in line outside, and they only are allowing 25 people in at a time. And stores, a lot of Trader Joe's aren't gargantuanly big, like they're kind of small, which I'm kind of okay with, because I've been to a couple other food stores, and it's like the feeling's just weird, man. It's just avoidance, and it's just like you look at something, and me and you both look at the salad, and I'm like, no, you go. No, you go. Like, there's just this weird, I don't want to come near you vibe that it's just not a happy experience. Like, you're not excited to buy food. You're like buying it out of necessity.
Mm.
And so the lines, you're there, and I would say 80% of the people have masks. I didn't have a mask, but 80% rocking masks, some gloves. But they did a nice job as far as they would take the carts, and every time a cart came out, they had two people in charge of spraying them down and wiping them. It's just like weird experience, man. Like, this is like I said, this is America today right now. It's just, it feels like a movie. It feels like a country that's not ours right now. It's really weird.
Or for starters, are you a little worried you went to like the king of the organics? Because probably by the time I end this sentence, all your food has rotted by now.
Yeah, right. We try to do as much organic as we can, especially produce. To me, like, produce is pretty, I don't find a major difference in the price, at least. So we try to eat organic when possible.
Okay.
So it's kind of like a usual thing, like. But we're doing all right. We're doing all right on food. We're keeping here. I will say, the coronavirus has touched home to me, I guess. Like, someone, a coworker has it. Another coworker has it. Somebody's dad died that I worked with due to complications with it. My cousin has it. Again, a kid I went to high school with has it. So it's like, it's funny, you see the stories getting closer. You see the little maps and you see the cases, and before you know it, all of a sudden you're hearing 4 or 5 cases that are, you're one, what is that, 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon? You're 1 degree, you're 1 degree away from it. You know, you're 1 step away from it. It's pretty scary, man. So
7 degrees of Corona Bacon. Gotcha.
Corona Bacon.
I know one person who got it. We were kind of worried for that person because they had immune issues. I'm happy from the reports I'm hearing that he seems to be recovering in isolation right now. So that's a great sign. He didn't have to go on ventilators or anything like that. So, yeah. I mean, knock on wood, there's only one person that we're aware of.
Yeah, my cousin, my cousin is apparently, she's over the hump. Like, she feels better, just kind of tired and out of it and isolated, but it's just crazy.
Yeah. So, yeah, I went to the local store, Ingles. A lot of people in there. The lines, they have the, like, on the tape down there saying, do your 6 feet. Not a lot of people adhering to it while walking around in Ingles. I didn't have a mask. I had a scarf I just put over my face, and I couldn't find gloves. I found one glove, so I was kind of somewhat Michael Jacksoning in the store.
You were only using your right hand to shop?
Pretty much, yeah. I had the right hand that I was pushing the cart, and anytime I picked up things, I got off the cart and put it in there. I would say, like, when I was in line, there was a guy right behind me, like a little too close, where I kind of had to give him a look, not a nasty look, but kind of the like the really, dude, you really think somebody's going to cut you off in these 6 feet apart from each other? You think somebody's just going to walk up and be like, "Yo, you're not in line," and just sneak in there?
Wouldn't it suck if, like, after all this is over, they figured out that 7 feet was the cure? Ah, crap.
Damn it. I forgot to carry the one. Damn it. Yeah, I mean, there's conflicting reports. Like, we used to do running with our neighbor, and she would be on the other side of the road while we ran. And there's kind of conflicting reports on, is 6 feet enough? Does it change that you're exercising? Because some people are saying the 6 feet is only if you have to be in an area with other people, stay 6 feet away. They don't recommend it on regular IM. So we kind of stopped running with our neighbor. I know, like, one report, they were saying up to like 27 feet a sneeze could go. But I remember the, what's his name? Was it Dr. Fauci? Is it the
Fauci? Yeah.
Fauci. Yeah, I know. He said that's a little tad ridiculous.
I don't know. You never heard my Uncle John sneeze. He could send corona from one town to the other, man. I remember he's the type of uncle who's like, you know, like this sonic boom coming out of his nose. So
he has like a full wind-up in a pitch.
Yeah. Like that old wind-up from like the old pitchers used to do with the like the old hands at the side wind-up. Yeah.
Why'd you have to use pepper? I don't know what's worse, the people who have the wind-up or the people who have nothing and have the loudest sneezes on earth where it's like dead quiet, then all of a sudden it sounds like a shotgun blast as somebody sneezes.
It's so funny because the other day I had to sneeze in the food store and I like did anything to try to like compress it because I didn't want to look like the biggest villain ever, you know, like like F that guy, you know, like...
Great, now I can't get groceries. Thanks, God.
Yeah. You ruined it for everyone.
I can't go in the canned foods aisle. I can't get my black olives. Thanks, Scott.
Yeah, man, it's crazy. Like, we're at, like, where we go food shopping, and I put the stuff on the stairs, like, because we live in a split level. And I put the stuff on the stairs, and then we get out the Lysol wipes and wipe down the packaging and stuff like that. You know, maybe it's all for nothing, but to me, it's like it's one little thing we can do that maybe me and her don't get it. I don't know.
I miss free samples. It's one thing I notice I miss, like going to the grocery. Like when I was going to work in Kennesaw, we had a Whole Foods, and like, man, they had like chips with guacamole available. Somebody had cheese samples. They had pretzels.
So, Berlo, so people are like losing their jobs and their family members, and you're sitting there at home like, God, I miss free samples. You know, like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do without the free samples?
Well, I also go to Sam's Club, and you've been to a Sam's Club. You know the feeling of going to a Sam's Club and be like, wait a minute, I can't get a free piece of salmon? Hold up.
Yeah. Well, Berlo, before you know it, free samples might be back. You know, come July, you'll be free sampling again.
I mean, it's kind of an interesting question. I wonder
if they even will.
Like, with the scare of everything, regardless of we fix it all or if it comes back, I wonder if that's one of those things that'll be like a pass item.
I think there's going to be a lot of changes, man. I think a lot of people are going to be more efficient with washing hands, and there's going to be a lot more like food in public that's protected by who knows, God knows what, glass and free samples. Like, it is interesting. They might be a thing of the past, man.
Yeah, more alcohol rubs. I'm kind of curious about like public water fountains, if they will keep that around or try to change a system where it's some way where it's not somebody hovering their mouth.
You know what I can see? It'll be like a little plastic thing there, like little connectors that you take your own and you put them on the water fountain, so you're not drinking from the same. I don't know. There's gonna be a lot of changes, man. This is not gonna be done, and everyone's gonna be like, yay, back to restaurant. Like, restaurants, I think, are gonna be a lot more like have to be cleaner and prove that they're cleaner. And I really don't. I think we're going to be feeling the effects of this for years.
Yeah. I could see the salad bar being a thing in the past.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Sizzlers right now are like, no.
Yeah. Ruby Tuesdays, that was my jam and all. The all-you-can-eat salad bar, that was my go-to every time I went there, man.
Are there still Sizzlers out there? Is Sizzler gone?
I think they're still out there. I haven't been to one probably since I was like 14, mm-hmm. but I have still heard the name. It's probably one. It's kind of like Krausers. Like Krausers went out of business about 8 times, but there's still Krausers around for some reason.
There's still a Krausers right by my parents' house that's been there forever. And I used to even have a joke in my set. Maybe I'll bring it back. But I used to talk about how Krausers was like a museum of convenience stores. Like they don't take debit cards. They still have pornography in like brown paper bags. They have one pot of coffee there. Like Krausers are never nice.
No. That is the, oh crap, it's 1 a.m. and we can't find a Wawa.
Right. I need a gallon of milk. Go to Krausers. He has $2. That would be my grandma. Like,
yeah. But, everything stinks in there. Like you feel nasty even like grabbing like a carton of milk. You're like, I'm not sure this is a cow milk. I mean, I can't fathom this being tasty in any way.
I think it's that guy's milk, but and, so let's that guy's milk is a natural segue to our guest.
That's my favorite TV show, That Guy's Milk.
Yeah, you know how we're
Scott Baio
masters of segues here, but we have a phenomenal guest tonight.
Is exciting.
That I think. It's cool for me because people always ask us like, hey, how do you get these guests on? Like, and they want to like interview guests. And I say, honestly, a lot of work, man. A lot of work. Yeah. Like
just spitballing and just looking at what haven't we got and just
following up. All I can say is follow up over and over again. Like, I don't know. Like a lot of these people that you want to interview are extremely busy and do a million things. And there's also 8 million podcasts out there and people that want to, like, you got to remember that and put things into perspective. So this one's, I'm really happy about because this was one of my leads that I hunted down for a while. I think probably about 2 years, maybe a year and a half, just constant email back and forth. Like, oh, Howard is, working on a movie. Howard's this, that, and that. But we are talking to Howard Berger. Now, Howard Berger is not an actor or a director, but he is probably someone you have seen his work in not only one or two things, but probably 3 or 4 of your favorite things. Because Howard has worked on things, Tarantino movies, The Green Mile, Chronicles of Narnia, the last season of Breaking Bad, The Walking Dead, Hitchcock, The Amazing Spider-Man 2, Ted 2. It goes on and on and on. Inglourious Bastard, all sorts of stuff.
Like literally his IMDb is like a mile long.
Yeah. It's funny because I was talking to Mike before this and I was like, Mike, have you sat and read this guy's resume? It's like, it's almost intimidating in a way. Like what do you talk about? Like how many things can you talk about? What do you pick? Because you could have a podcast series just about him. But we're going to get Howard Berger on the line, who is part of an effects team, K&B Effects, with somebody you might know, recognize the name Greg Nicotero, for the last 27, 28 years or whatnot. Really looking forward to the interview. So let's get Howard Berger on the line. Howard, you should be able to hear my buddy Mike here. Mike?
Hey, Mike.
How's it going, Howard?
Good. How about with you?
About as good as we can be in this current situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy shit, right?
It's, it's like every day when you think it's like, okay, we're gonna be on the other end of this thing soon. It certainly doesn't seem that way.
No, not yet. No. I think it's gonna be a little bit.
Yeah,
a little bit.
It's kind of it's really it's a test of human will at this point too. I think it's like you gotta keep the mind sharp and stay positive, stay busy. I think that's like the most important thing. But Howard, where are we calling you at? Where are you at now?
I'm at my home in Sherman Oaks, California.
California. Okay. So yeah, you guys are hit pretty bad over there too. We're in I'm in Jersey, so we're getting hit really bad. Oh, yeah. So
you guys are getting hit really bad. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in Georgia. We just realized apparently it's contagious according to our governor.
That just came to fruition, huh? Mm-hmm.
Pretty much, he did a speech where he said, we just found out that people who don't show signs apparently can still spread it to people.
Mm. There you go.
Georgia. Good old Georgia.
Yeah.
So, Howard, first off, I want to thank you for giving us time. It's been, I feel like I've been hunting you down for probably maybe 2 years, something like that. I've been trying to.
Yeah, no, it's all good. It's been crazy.
Oh,
man.
Yeah, no.
It's like not, it's nonstop, and but this worked out perfect. So I'm actually, I'm getting to do yours. I have another one next week, and so I'm kind of like catching up on all my podcasts and stuff, and everything I haven't been able to get to because work's been so insane.
Yeah, man,
it's nice.
It only took a global pandemic to get us together. So
yeah, that's so true. So true.
Yeah. So how like you from the beginning, like just looking at your freaking resume and the things you've done, I've been wanting to get you on because you fit like kind of the what we go for on the show. We're always trying to look for interesting people and interesting careers and whatnot. I gotta ask you, how did this all start for you? Were you a kid who was like into like making home horror movies? Were you a guy that ever planned on being in special effects and makeup and whatnot? How did this find you?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, listen, it's something that's like inbred in you, like it's in your blood. It's not, that's why I always find it funny when I get emails and correspondence from people all over the world. They're like, yeah, I kind of think I want to do this. And I would say, it's not a kind of think. It's like if you don't do it, you're going to die. That's really how it feels, you know? And through the years I've worked up like, I don't want to say a standard email I send out, but it really puts things in perspective and also really makes people it helps me weed out the people that are just not really serious about it and think there's one answer, you know, that right. gets you into the loop, but it weeds them out pretty well. But I grew up here in LA. My dad was in the film business. He was a post-production sound editor, and my mom was an artist and a teacher, and I just grew up loving monsters like from day one. The first movie I ever saw, first horror film I ever saw, was I think it was The Two-Headed Transplant with Rosie Grier and Ray Milland, and that to me was terrifying. And then I saw Dr. Fives, and Dr. Fives was risen from the grave, and I had nightmares forever about those movies. But I knew that I knew that somebody made these monsters for movies, and I asked my dad, and he said, yeah, back then there wasn't a name for like special makeup effects, but it was just like, yeah, there's makeup guys and special effects guys, and they make all this stuff, and this is how they do it. And then I discovered, you know, the Universal monsters and Creature in the Black Lagoon and Frankenstein, and then as soon as I realized that there were these great monsters in Japan like Godzilla and Rodan and Gamera, I was totally flipped, and I was just all obsessed with monsters. Probably since I don't know, maybe 5 years old, I ran around with a Dracula cape on and at one point I knocked out my front teeth accidentally. I walked into a fire hydrant. I don't know how I did that when I was a kid, and all that were left with were my canines. And so I would run through the,
Howard, you're taking this vampire thing too hard.
Yeah, no, really. Yeah. Yeah. I said I accidentally walked into it, and I would run through the neighborhood with my Dracula cape on that my mom made me. And it was just all about monsters. So, as I started to get a little older, I'd say about 8 years old, I really discovered like Famous Monsters of Filmland, the magazine that Fori Akkonen put out, and realized that there were like these makeup men, you know, Planet of the Apes. I got to see Planet of the Apes. I just had to figure it out. So I would look through Famous Monsters of Filmland with like a magnifying glass and take a look and see what was like on John Chambers' work table or Lon Chaney or, you know, all these other makeup guys that were featured in the magazine.
Right.
And that's really what, you know, I just tried to learn from that And I went, and my grandfather had taken me to this one makeup store that was in L.A. or in Hollywood, in North Hollywood, called Sig Friends Beauty Supply. And it's still around. It's not in the same place. It's owned by some different people. And now it's just called Friends Beauty Supply, and it's like a mecca. But this was like this teeny little shop. I mean, it was so small. But when I walked in, it was so magical because it was a makeup store, and it just happened to have stuff that you use for makeup effects. And there was a guy that worked behind the counter named Nanny, and he was so nice to me and turned me on to like alginate, which is what we used to cast faces with, right, and clay and sculpting tools and all this. And the place was like filled with stuff. But you walked in, and it was like the smell of makeup. Like it was the castor oil makeup, and you could, you know, see this. And there was photos on the walls. And literally, I anytime my parents went on like an errand, I'd say, I'll go with you. And somehow we would end up detouring to Friends Beauty Supply so I could go in and, like, you know, buy this or buy that. Or, you know, I was mowing lawns. I mowed the entire neighborhood's lawns to earn money so I could go to Friends Beauty Supply and buy like a gallon of latex or a bag of plaster, you know. So
that's awesome.
It was crazy. Yeah, it was super crazy. And I just was artistic. I always was drawing. And of course, the Aurora Monster model kits were massive in my world, and always, you know, building them and painting them. And I was just telling my wife this. It's like the most exciting part of when you put the model together is when you get to the last step, which is put all the blood all over it. You've got the red testers paint, you know, and you're like, okay, it's time for the blood, and you bloody the shit out of it. And to me, that was always the most exciting part, building those models, just figuring out where all the blood you're going to splatter all over it.
Howard, can I hang up and call you back? We got like a weird kind of connection. I want to see if we just can get a better connection. I'll call you in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, cool. Right. Bye.
So, I'm curious, when you were playing on your lifetime goal, was it always to get into makeup? Because like when I'm looking at your IMDb, I see the first credit I can see in 77, you being an actor in something called A Secret Space.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. I think, you know what, I know it's weird. Like, are you looking, and you said on IMDb, which I think is totally half the time incorrect on shit. I go in there and I correct stuff all the time. I'm like, I don't know what the hell that is. But yeah, there's stuff on my IMDb page. It's attributed to me. And I'm like, I have no idea what that is. Or like there's videos posted and I'm like, I have nothing to do with any of that. So, but yeah, no, it always was about makeup effects and doing creature stuff and you know, trying to figure it out. I knew I wanted to be a monster maker. So when I was probably about 10 years old, there used to be these great science fiction, horror, and fantasy conventions down by LAX at the Marriott. And a guy named Doug Wright threw these conventions. And they were mostly Star Trek conventions. So there was one it must have been 75 maybe, or 76. And Ray Harryhausen, who was like the king of stop motion animation, was going to be there. And I grabbed my book from The Land Beyond and went to go get it autographed. And I sat and watched Ray's presentation and heard him and stood in line and you know, got an autograph. And then I saw there was a sign that said Rick Baker talking about King Kong, Incredible Melting Man, and some other stuff. And I'm like, oh, that sounds cool. I don't know who Rick Baker is, but I'll check it out.
Right.
So I went in and watched. And at that point, I'm like, oh, God, this guy's the god of makeup. You know, he's so fantastic. And he was there promoting Incredible Melting Man. And after that, I became really, really obsessed with Rick and everything he had done, and found out that he had done the two-headed transplant, the gorilla, in the beginning of the movie, which nice. Was the first film I ever saw. And which was shot on the corner of like Franklin and Cahuenga. Even now when I drive by it, I always say to my wife, like, I've never said it before, like, you know, they shot 200 transplant right there. She's like, yeah, you told me that like 700 times.
keep your eyes on the road, honey.
yeah. I'm like, it's still exciting. Like Rick Baker was in a gorilla suit right there. But, but then I also, you know, discovered Stan Winston, who did the Terminator movies and Aliens and Jurassic Park. Nice. And he actually, his studio was about a mile and a half away from where I lived. So I packed up a box of just shit, essentially, and photographs and a couple sculptures and, you know, nothing great. And I think I was 11 years old, and I went and found it, knocked on the door, and he answered and let me come in and looked at my stuff, which was very below substandard, and was really, really cool to me. And so like I was able to contact as a kid just because I wouldn't take no for an answer, and I just took initiative and was proactive to, you know, meet Stan Winston and Rick Baker, and then contact Dick Smith, who did The Godfather, and he was on the East Coast, so I was always writing him, and he started the makeup department at NBC back in the 40s, and you know, just pretty amazing overall, and really got to know these guys, they really got, I guess, to know me. And it was mostly because I was stalking them and bugging the shit out of them. But I knew it was the only way, you know. So I maintained relationships with them all through my, you know, childhood into my teen years. And then when I graduated high school, Stan hired me to work over there on, I was working on Aliens.
Oh, cool.
And and not that, that was my first credit, but
right.
But that was the first real, like my first real experience working at like a major effect shop and learning so much and meeting the guys that I'm still friends with today, you know, that we all work together. So it was great, you know, but in so much of it had to do with my parents being very, very supportive. Yeah, it's so important. I mean, you know, they even built me a little studio in the back of the house, but I think that's because I trashed my room and destroyed like an oven and fucked up the whole house, you know. So,
Howard, we got to get the blood off the walls before you're allowed to be in your bedroom.
It was kind of like that. I mean, at one point, my parents went in and tore up all the carpeting in my room, and I just had like the slab on the floor. And they're like, "This way, you can just hose it out." And I'm like, "That sounds great to me." So, because you know, it was paint and right. plaster and clay and fake blood and hair, it's just everything. I just worked all the time in my room and just made a giant mess of it. And they're like, "We're going to build you something outside." So
how
got me out of the house.
You know, that's awesome. I mean, so you've been doing it for so long. I wonder, like, you know, you see a kid these days and they have access to these phones and the YouTube and able to get their stuff out instantly. How how jealous would old 1980s Howard be of kids today with what they have at their disposal?
Yeah, no, they're lucky. But you know, it's interesting. I'm more critical of the kids today because they have so much access.
Yeah.
So like, I cut it. I always say, you know, because I was like, "Oh, you know, can you take a look at this or look at that?" And I'm really, really, really critical of one, how they present themselves. Because I really learned that from Stan Winston. You know, it's like the way you present yourself is almost half of the, you know, the job interview. You know, if you go in being a schlub and an idiot and just kind of throw caution to the wind, it's not going to happen. You're like,
right.
But so yeah, I mean, it's great. They have schools. We didn't have schools. I think there was one school, Joe Belasco's, and I didn't attend any makeup school or any makeup courses. I just taught myself on my own, and then when I got into it, learned from the people I was working with and got better and better and better.
Right.
But nowadays, yeah, I mean, I get a tremendous amount of email and of course, you know, "Hey, check out my Instagram and check out this and check out that." but I am really critical of it because I'm trying to teach people the right way to do this.
Yeah.
You know, like
set a standard too.
Yeah, you have to, and I want it to, if it's going to move forward, you know, and continue on, it has to do it in a manner of you know, respect to everybody and respect to themselves. And I was at a this makeup convention or trade show, IMATS, last year, and this kid ran up to me. He's like, "Oh, Mr. Berger, can I show you some makeup I did?" And I'm like, "Absolutely." So he had it on his phone, which of course is not always I don't really like looking at stuff on the phone. It's so small, but
right.
That's all he had. And I'm looking, and the whole glass is shattered on the phone. And I go, "Dude," I said, "this is like I'm looking at Spider-Man's phone. I can't see anything." I said, "This is not the way to present yourself." And I said, "I'm going to just teach you a lesson right now, that this was your one chance to show me what you have. And you did a really poor job at doing that."
Yeah.
And I said, "Next time you're, you know, it's not like you just happened to come across this trade show where, hey, there just happened to be tons of makeup people. You specifically came here." So I said, "For me, print out the photos, put it into a book, a portfolio, like we used to do, or organize it on an iPad so that I'm, when I look through it, it's organized properly. That's the other thing. Two people will come to me with an iPad,
yep,
and there's like a makeup photo, and then there's 10 photos at some birthday party, and then a photo. And I'm like, yes, guys, it's really not that hard. Just put together an album of your stuff. You know,
that's probably the best advice for some of those kids.
Well, it is. Presentation is so much. There's a guy named Steve Johnson who's a very talented makeup artist. And when I met him when I was really young, he was working at Rick Baker's, and he showed me his portfolio. And he had not just taken photos of the work, but he had put them into an environment. Like there was this great zombie like coming out of the ground, and there was, you know, mist on the ground and a cool gravestone that was kind of like askew. And I'm like, wow, that's really cool. And I started like shooting my stuff that way, you know, putting it in environments, and realized, you know, you want to take photos in the best possible lighting and environments, because it's about the presentation.
Yeah, yeah.
So again, I always tell people, I said, please do not show me photos that have been taken in a bathroom or in a kitchen. I don't want to see a refrigerator behind Dracula. you know, be smart about how you photograph things. You know, don't show me photos and have excuses like, oh yeah, I didn't have. It's like, I don't want to hear it. Or point out stuff like, yeah, it's kind of shitty edges, but I'm like, why are you trying to sell yourself, or are you trying to like not? I don't understand what you're trying to do. So it's always that, you know. So that's the first thing. I'll look through a portfolio and whatever on an iPad or print it, and then I go back and I said, no, I'm going to give you some criticism if that's cool. Or, let me critique this. And like, please. And I go through, I'm like, okay, one photo of this makeup, not 27 photos. And I don't need to see different angles of this makeup. If I see the one photo and it's the best photo you pick, then we're groovy, you know. Or,
right,
you know, do a mask, you know, because if you I always think, because that's how I started, was making masks. And I feel that if you can make a mask, that shows that you know how to design, you know how to sculpt, you know how to mold make, you know how to run latex, you know how to seam, patch, paint, hair, teeth, eyes. It's the whole kit and caboodle, you know?
So
I'm always like, make a mask, sculpt a mask. And I'll give people assignments. And right now there's this one kid that sent me some stuff on Instagram, and he's really, really good. His stuff is cool. But then I said, hey, you know what? I'm going to give you two assignments. And I gave him two assignments, and he did them. And that was a miracle right there. And they were really, really good. It was just like sculpt a hand and sculpt a skull. And he did it. And he sent me photos. And I'm like, these are great. That's, you know, cool. And he's like, yeah, that was really cool. And he's like, and I said, okay, now do a foot. And he did a monster head. And then he did the foot. He's like, I just had to get a monster head in. And I'm like, I get it. It's cool. So
that's neat.
But I like giving people. And that also weeds it out, too. That also calls the herd, because I give assignments to people, and then I never hear from them again. And that just tells me they really weren't
serious. You don't want it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, or when I send out that kind of formed email, it's like, these are the questions you need to ask yourself. Like, do you love this? You know, is it the only thing you want to do in your life? You know, have you ever done a makeup? Have you ever done a sculpture? You know, what are truly your artistic abilities? You know, and you know, send me five photos of makeups or whatever, or sculptures that you feel best represent you. And I'd say, yeah, and I'll send it out, you know, and maybe like out of 10 people I send it to, I hear back from one.
Yeah,
and
people don't want to put in the work. They don't.
They're lazy, and they literally think there's an answer. Like, you know, how do I get into this? And like, well, you just say abracadabra, and then you're in. You know, I think they're like really, really seriously think anything in the film industry is that. But it's not. You work so hard.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to climb up. I mean, when I started working, I worked at a place called MMI, and it was for a guy named John Buechler, who passed away last year. And John did, great guy, did a lot of shitty movies, but you know, it's a great place to start. And John really gave us a huge opportunity, all of us that worked there, and you know, did movies like Ghoulies and Troll, and you know, those Charlie Band low budget movies.
Yeah.
But that was a great place to start. And then when I went to Stan Winston's, you know, to do Aliens, and I worked on an Aliens, Predator, Invaders from Mars, and Pumpkinhead. Yeah, when I worked at Stan's, and I mean, I got a hell of an education, and I worked at Rick Baker's on Harry and the Hendersons. So, but right. But what, you know, the thing is, this is the other thing I noticed. So when I would finish work, I'd go home and I'd do my own stuff, you know?
Right.
And now I see people like, they come to work and they go home and don't do anything. And I'm like, well, this is your opportunity. I mean, I'm using this period of downtime, of hiatus, and with, you know, with what's going on in the world, to actually just continue being creative. So like, I did a couple sculptures, I did a bunch of drawings, I just did a couple paintings, and relearning the ukulele.
I was going to ask you that actually later on, but with the shutdown and whatnot, what are you, I guess you're still able to create as long as you have the supplies, at your hand.
Yeah. No, absolutely. We have an art area at the house downstairs, and my wife's an artist as well. She's a graphic designer and painter and illustrator. But I went to the shop and I picked up a couple of head forms and a bunch of clay, and
cool.
I picked up my tools and I, you know, sculpted a couple things and it's cool, man. It's all the shit that I've been wanting to do that I'm like, I wish I had time to do this. And now it's given me that time or I'll sit upstairs and draw all day long, mm-hmm. you know, and just listen to me. It's stuff I did when I was younger, when I didn't have so much responsibility. And right now, literally, this is the first time in a decade, maybe longer, that I haven't been getting like emails, texts, phone calls from production and producers asking ridiculous questions. And I'm like, this is so fantastic. This is the upside of it. I mean, this is what's happening. It's absolutely hideous and horrible.
I agree. I think it also gives everyone a second to take a breath and figure out how to entertain themselves and
absolutely
push themselves, especially like the creative people. You know, everyone's turning to the artists now for entertainment. I hope they remember that when this is all over.
Yeah, so when they go back to shitting all over us again.
Exactly.
Yeah, which all happened
through the pandemic, but that last movie, that looked horrible.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, because, you know, throughout history, artists have been crapped on and abused, and, you know, it's always like, hey, can you just do us a favor? I'm like, why don't you do me a favor and just add some zeros to that?
Yeah.
You know, it's the thing I always hear, like, oh, if you can just do us the favor, it's like, why do you guys think doing art or anything like that is free? Like, you know, I don't understand where that whole mentality comes from.
It's funny, you might appreciate it. I was approached 2 days ago about doing a virtual comedy show, and I was like, okay. I was like, this is going to be interesting. I said, look, you got to, you know, to do this, you got to pay us. Like, you know, I got to make sure these comics do, because one, it's really awkward. Two, it's like comedy and no audience don't really go together very well. So I said, you really got to respect the art. And they're like, oh, and like, but they actually came through, and what I asked for, they're actually down to do. So it's going to be a very unique experience, that's for sure.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, but it's always... Yeah, I heard there's, isn't this weekend there's a big comedy?
Yeah, a couple people are doing it, virtual things.
I think Bob Saget's hosting it.
Right, the Bob Saget. But I mean, it's got to be hard to play against nobody,
as a
comedian.
We're doing it in Zoom, where like there's going to be like an audience of 30 to 40 people. So I'm going to find out. Cool. I'll report back to you.
Yeah. Yes, please do. I think that's fantastic. And Zoom. Listen, buy stock in Zoom.
I know.
Yeah, really.
You know?
WebEx, I mean, Zoom, all of them.
Yeah, it's Zoom is like, that's all I've been doing is doing
Me
Zoom
too.
Conferences.
Me too. It was my aunt's 70th birthday last night. We all called her and surprised. I don't know. At least it's something, you know?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I think it's great. I think it's really great. So, yeah, it's forcing us to do a lot of things that we just normally wouldn't do and think about. And it'll be interesting when the time comes when everything opens up again, how we reintroduce being social again.
Because right now, you go
to the grocery store, you know, for a quick pickup, and everyone there looks like, you know, or looks at you like you've got the zombie plague. Yeah, or something.
It looks like a scene you were hired to work on. That's what the grocery store feels like.
Yeah, I get like massive anxiety. I'm like, I don't really want to go.
Me too.
I don't feel well, and I'm like, ugh. Yeah. So, but you know, what are you going to do? Yeah. But yeah, it's really interesting, and it'll be interesting to see how we reintegrate into everything. So, I don't know.
One thing I wanted to dive into you. I mean, obviously, there's so many different movies you've done, but I see like early on you did a lot of like the sequels to like some of the greats. Horror movies, Leatherface 3, Halloween 5, Nightmare on Elm Street 4 and 5. When you're going in there with a commodity that's already been established, do you try to find a way to like put your own tweak on things, or are you pretty much set by this is what the character is, you gotta go by the book?
Oh, that's a good question, actually. Let me think about it. Yeah, no, it's well, when I worked, we'll take one horror icon franchise at a time. So let's look at Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, which I think is the biggest. And when I first worked on Nightmare, it was Nightmare 4 was the first one I did. I was working for a great makeup artist named Kevin Yeager, who designed Freddy. And so I was applying Robert's makeup, and I applied it like over 100 times through the course of all the that movie and a couple other things, Freddy's Nightmares and so forth. And, you know, Kevin had a real specifics to that makeup. And, you know, what they used to do back then is, because the films were greenlit and already had a release date, usually before the script was even written, that we had to like really bang everything out. It was nonstop, 7 days a week, ridiculous hours, shooting in a warehouse, probably in Santa Clarita in California. And there were all these different units. There could be like 8 units running, and they'd hire all these different makeup effect shops. Like they would hire, in the later films, they'd hire us, K&B, to come in and do stuff, and then a Screaming Mad George, maybe, and Steve Johnson, and we'd all be building stuff because it all had to happen so quickly, and we'd all put our own spin on it, yes. We wanted to bring our own, like, essence, and like, yeah, this is our gag, you know, but there's perimeters to some degree. It wasn't like, oh, no, Freddie wouldn't have this line in his face or that line. It wasn't like that. It was kind of keeping in the flavor of the stories and the universe that Freddy lives in. Regarding Halloween, we did Halloween 5, and I think we worked on H2O, and we had changed the mask, which has become a huge discussion on all the Halloween board, you know, discussion boards, is we changed the nose per the director's request. And not that we fully agreed with it, but he wanted to do something different.
Right.
And everybody, every Halloween fan gave us shit forever and still does. Like, why'd you guys change the nose? What was with that mask? It was shit, you know? So, you know, everybody's used to seeing Michael Myers, the Dawn Post, you know, Captain Kirk painted white mask, and from the original John Carpenter one, which is still one of my all-time favorite horror films ever. And so, it's been interesting, you know, and for those movies, you know, those, it was really just all killing and blood and gut stuff. And the one we did, that part 5, Greg Nicotero, who owns K&B with me, he supervised that, and he went to, I think they shot it in Salt Lake City, went there, and he supervised all of it. But yeah, forever and ever, we got shit about the mask, you know, not looking like, what happened to it? Why did you guys do that? So we really had no explanation.
Yeah, that really ruined the movie for me.
With
all of the murder and the psychological things, all I could do is, that nose is so weird.
Yeah, you should hear him, Howard.
Exactly.
Weekly, we'll be talking about something, and he just starts ranting about, you know, the nose.
I'm sorry, man. I wish, if I could do one thing different, I'd go back in time and change that. So
thank you. That's all I have.
There you go. Yeah, that's it. And then regarding Leatherface, I mean, we did part 3, and then we worked on the reboots, you know, the Michael Bay reboots, and for part 3 was crazy and a total, that's back when New Line Cinema was just pumping these horror movies out like crazy, and right. It was a complete like shit show, of course. And I remember Greg and I, we were testing this chainsaw head in the movie. Ken Foray gets his head gets chainsawed in half, and so we built this, you know, fake head, his gelatin head with a plaster core, you know, filled with blood. And so we rented a chainsaw, and we were sawing it, you know, videotaping it and sawing it by this wall by our shop in the parking lot. And we're like, great.
That just sounds fun.
Yeah, it was. Somewhere there's video of it, and blood and shit spraying everywhere. We're like, yeah, it's great. Like an hour later, the guys who had parked their car on the other side of the wall, which is another company, came over and fucking were pissed because we just got blood and guts and shit all over their cars and all that stuff. So, and then we had to find a way to clean the chainsaw and take it back to the rental place. There's like chewed up gelatin, which looks like flesh in the belt and all that stuff. But that was a fun thing. I sculpted that Leatherface makeup, actually, or the mask. I had a face cast of my dad, and he had a very large face. And I'm like, we need a big face for this. Excuse me. So I took that, I knocked it out like in a couple days, and that's what that Leatherface mask was on RA. But Yeah, I mean, you know, in same Friday the 13th, we really wanted to put our turn on it. We did Jason Goes to Hell, and Adam Marcus was the writer-director on it. He really let us go hog wild. And Bob Kurtzman, who used to be the K in K&B, Bob's has been out of the company for about 16 years. He supervised that for the most part, and that was a really, really fun but difficult show. I think the only horror... the only horror genre or the horror franchise we didn't work on, believe it or not, was probably Hellraiser. Hmm. You know, I mean, as far as those classic ones, we never did a Hellraiser film for some reason. I don't know why.
They heard about the nose.
Yeah, they heard. They saw. That's right. They heard about the nose. They're like, no, we can't change his nose. Pinhead cannot have a different nose.
So let me ask you. Working everything through from the horror genre to The Walking Dead to Narnia to everything like that, and you clearly with the love of practical effects and figuring out how to make things happen, do you find yourself like having to carrying a flag for the love of practical effects rather than just CGIing everything? Are you still
absolutely.
Are you like the authority on it at this point, kind of?
Well, I think all of us are. I mean, the thing is, K&B, which was established in 1988, is now 32 years. And Greg and I really, really work hard to make what we do part of the team. It's part of the filmmaking experience. It's not like we're vendors or anything like that. We're very, very involved with figuring out how things work, how things are shot, you know. And now that Greg has moved up the ladder to be a director and an executive producer on the Walking Dead series,
mm-hmm. Right.
Has been really great and gives you a little bit more muscle, you know, at times. And, I think any of us that are doing it carry the flag. And what it was is when it first started, you know, at the heyday in the early 80s, it was like, oh, a bunch of like kind of rock and roll headbanger guys. Cause we all had like mullets and, you know, Slayer t-shirts with the sleeves cut off and all that shit. And, you know, black jeans. And we go to set and we were like the rock and roll, you know, makeup effects guys.
Kind of upset you're not wearing that right now.
Yeah, I'll tell you. It's very sad. When Stan Winston really came up into the big mix, you know, after Terminator and all that, he really started to see things differently and started to really want it to be a respected business and be really a main part of the filmmaking crew and really gave it that he set the bar very high and that started to turn things. So, you know, Quentin Tarantino always says, you know, today you're a hero, but tomorrow you could be a bum. Meaning that, like, we're having a successful day on set today, but I can fuck it all up tomorrow, and then I'm a bum. So I think that kind of played into what happened. So, you know, we were like the heroes, and then Jurassic Park came out, and then we became bums because everything was, oh, CGI, CGI.
Right.
And then as filmmakers just felt like, oh, everything should be CGI, what they didn't understand is the work on Jurassic Park was millions and millions of dollars with really brilliant people and Steven Spielberg in charge and a giant mix of practical stuff where Stan Winston really fought to build a big mechanical T-Rex and a big mechanical Brachiosaur and the spitters and so forth.
Right.
And it was a combination. It was a marriage of the two. But filmmakers, I started to find, like, I remember I was doing this one film, Little Nicky, with Adam Sandler, and mm-hmm. there was a gag where Harvey Keitel starts to fall apart. And he's sitting in this throne, and his lower torso is missing. And I went to the director, and I said, what we should do for this is we just do it the old way. We cut a hole in the thing. We put Harvey in it. I'll build, like, a torso section. It'll look great. He's like, no, 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 that's the old way. We're going to go state-of-the-art. And they did a digital thing, and it looks like shit.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing it. I'm like, yeah, this is terrible. And I ran into the director recently. Steve Brill's his name. He's a good guy. And I said, see, you should have listened to me. He's like, yeah, I know. It was a total fuck up. And I'm like, just because it was new doesn't mean it's better. I mean, you probably would have saved a couple hundred thousand dollars, and this would have cost maybe $2,500 to do on Harvey, and it would have been done in the can and move on to the next thing. But as filmmakers started to see that VFX was not the answer to everything, and started to, I don't want to say shy away, but not use it as much. We then started to build relationships. Greg and I decided to build relationships with visual effects houses and visual effects supervisors and producers and see what we could do to help them and how they could help us. Because obviously we can't do everything and they can't do everything. So I think for us individually, for Greg and I, Greg was on Sin City with Robert Rodriguez, and there is a tremendous amount of crossover of practical effects and visual effects.
Right.
And I was on the first Narnia, and again, a huge combination. So we both worked with the VFX department very closely, designing, creating, figuring it out. And at the end of the day, it's a great marriage of makeup effects and visual effects. And that's kind of how it's been ever since. And now the... you know, the screws are tight on the visual effects guys now. It used to be, you know, here's a blank check. Just put whatever you want at the end of the show, You know, it's like, you know, it's crazy. But now it's not like that at all. Those guys are like under the gun, same as everybody. Like their post-production time gets cut in half. They can't afford this. They can't afford that. It's so, you know, I'm almost finished when we come back to it after all this stuff. I've been on this Amazon Sony series and it's been like that. There's some cool creature stuff in it, which has mostly been practical because the creator of the show, a guy named Little Marvin, who's awesome, and soon everybody will know his name because this guy is full on, man. He knows his horror shit inside and out.
That's awesome.
And that's why I did it. Like, we spoke when I first met him, we spoke the same language, and I'm like, I got to work with this guy, and this guy's got to work with me, so it'll be great. But he really wanted to approach things on a practical level, and I was more than happy to do that. And we've worked really well with the VFX department. And sometimes there's things like, I think we could use a little tweak here, a tweak here. You know, I talked to VFX, and they're like, yes, absolutely, that's great. You've already established this, but we can go in and we'll alter this in post. And I'm like, that's going to make it even better. So I think it went from, you know, everybody trying to grandstand, like, you know, the visual effects guys trying to grandstand or the makeup effects guys trying to grandstand. Now it's about coming together and trying to give the filmmaker what his vision is.
Right.
You know, we were so fighting for our spot in the, you know, our spot in the spotlight that we weren't paying attention to the quality or the vision of the films, you know, that we were working on. And it took a while to get it and for all of us to work together to realize it's not about us. It's about what the production wants. What is the final outcome of this magic trick we're doing? And that's really the right way to think about it. So, you know, a lot of people will say like, oh, you guys must have a hard time finding work. I'm like, no, we have a hard time figuring out how we're going to do all the work that comes our way, because it's great, you know, and we'll recommend VFX people and they would recommend us all the time. We'll get a call like, oh, so-and-so recommended, you know, he's the VFX super and he wants to work with you guys again. I'm like, that sounds great. He's a great guy. We're in. So it's nice. It's a nice marriage and partnership.
Now, kind of going back to, your love and all the growing up, being into monsters and stuff. I'm kind of curious, when you kind of go into a different kind of genre movie, like just odd ones looking up, like Spy Kids 2 or I Heart Huckleberries, do you go into it with like the same kind of like passion, Howard? Yeah, rock and roll. I'm going to come in with the same mentality, or is it almost somewhat like, all right, this is a little different. Let me calm, figure this out, and do my thing.
Yeah, which is part of the enthusiasm. I'm always enthusiastic about anything we do. So is Greg. And it could be that, like, we could be like, you know, hey, Dust Till Dawn, holy shit, this is so fucking cool. You know, and then, you know, you get I Heart Huckabee, and it's like, okay, you're going to do these fake boobs on Jude Law that spurt milk. And I'm like, that sounds great. You know, I'm totally into it. And so, you know, you do that. And to me, and how we look at things at K&B is the most important job is the job we're on. You know, or the jobs we have in the shop. So, you know, every show, giant budget, small budget, medium budget, there's no discrimination at the shop.
Right.
It's what interests us. And we're able to find shows or shows come to us that are interesting to us. And we decide we want to work on that and we want to work with these people. You know, a lot of it has to do with that too. Well, we'll do a better job these days taking a look at who's involved, because it's a lot of work. It's a lot of effort. It's far more bigger headache than it's ever been these days because of the, unfortunately, a lot of the people that are in charge. But, you know, that's the nature of the beast. And, you know, we look at things that are cool. Like, you know, we're doing this small little kind of independent movie that has one makeup effect character in it, and it's going to be cool, and it's really exciting, and it's a teeny tiny little movie, but I was really interested in it, and I really like the people, I really like the director, and the cast is cool, so that's fun, you know. And but then, you know, we'll get giant, you know, Michael Bay will call, and he's like, yeah, we're doing this and this, and we always like working for Michael Bay. I mean, I really like Michael Bay tremendously. Mm-hmm. I know people think I'm insane when I say that, but, you know, I understand him, you know, I know how to act around him, and he respects me and my company and, you know, and Greg Nicotero, and
yeah,
and he doesn't torment us as he does everybody else, and I know how to handle him, and he's always been great with me, you know, but it's, you know, every project is its own animal, you know, it's always different, and you never know. You can pull your resources, like, oh yeah, shit, we did something like that in Pulp Fiction, or we did something like that in, you know, Creepshow 2 or whatever. But you know, you then bring to the table, like, well, we could do this and this, and you develop it. And as you're listening to the director, your brain is ticking away, tick, 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 and you're coming up with a million things. You're like, hey, how about this? How about this? How about this?
Yeah.
And they really, really, you know, production appreciates all the input you can put into it, you know, and not necessarily it's going to be the best idea, but, you know, we would hope that they would listen to us since we have the experience. I mean, I have this is my 38th year being wow. in the film industry. Jeez. And like I said, yeah, it's crazy. And because I started when I was 18. I literally got hired when I was 18, like the day after high school.
On the movie A Secret Space, right?
Yeah, like we're talking about. Whatever the shit that is. A Secret Space. I didn't even know what that is.
No,
I actually looked it up while we were talking, if you want to quit. A 13-year-old boy in New York City discovers an abandoned Lower East Side synagogue and joins the Motley congregation trying to rebuild it. Wow. His hip liberal parents freak out when they discover his involvement with religion. The ensuing conflict in the family and its ultimate resolution is the subject of this unique comedy drama. Congratulations.
That sounds funny. Because nothing is more funny than Hasidic Jews. So, you know, and all that stuff. Yeah, having underground things. So, yeah, I know it. I 100% never worked on that. Maybe there's another Howard Berger that worked on it. But I'm fascinated by it already. So I think I'm going to have to watch it, see if I'm in it somehow.
Now, when you go through these massive makeup jobs, and I can't even imagine how long some of these things take for The Walking uh-huh. Dead and Narnia and all. And you have these actors who are, you know, probably brilliant actors, but may have never been through, uh-huh. maybe never been through something as extreme as that. Do you guys actually have to, like, get in there and kind of coach them on how to put this makeup on?
100%. Techniques? 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing is, I always feel, and there was a great makeup artist who I idolized. His name's Dan Strepek, and he's passed away. He passed away last year, but Danny is he did Planet of the Apes, and he ran the makeup department at 20th Century Fox, and just amazing guy. Did Tom Hanks's makeup for like 17 years, and just the salt of the earth. And he was a really like rough and gruff guy, and he said, you know, we're the most important people on the set because we can do anything and we can do everybody's job. And we're first in, we're last out.
Yep.
And any problem that comes up, we solve it. But there's nobody else on set that can solve the problems we solve. And I've always kind of thought that in my mind, on top of 100 other things Danny had said to me through my relationship with him. And so, you know, part of our job is we start the actor's day. And so the actor comes in, you want to have a very inviting, safe environment for them. They spend a lot of time in your trailer. You're with them on set, you know, touch up and all that. And, you know, also being there if they need anything, you know, I'm always make myself available and
right.
to actors and so forth. And then at the end of the day, you're there to clean them up and get them ready and out the door and, you know, see you in the morning. So there develops a bond with some actors, and it's not a matter of like, you go out to dinner and all that, I draw a very, very fine, a very, you know, deep line in the sand regarding a personal relationship between myself and the people I work with.
Okay.
I think that can be very dangerous. But like, for instance, I'll give you a good example. So we did this film, The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yes.
And our job was to do all Jamie Foxx's makeup effects, which was Electro.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
so, Yeah, so we designed this big makeup, and it was, I wanted to do it all in prosthetics, these silicone overlapping pieces. I didn't want to do a suit because it always wrinkles and buckles and looks weird. And I wanted to do just everything glued down. So I went to see Jamie, and I brought all the artwork. Greg Nicotero supervised all the art design work, and Mark Webb, who's the director, loved it right out of the gate. So I went to see Jamie, and I brought all the art, and I said, I just want to walk you through this. Because this is what it's going to be, and I want to make sure you're okay with it. Like, you're going to wear contact lenses, dentures, you're going to be covered in this shit. You know, when we just do your head and hands, it's going to be about an hour and a half. You know, we had a week of having to do his full body. I said, that's probably going to be 5 hours in the makeup room. It's
giving,
and then
me, giving gonna, me anxiety yeah, right now.
Yeah, and but I said, I just want you to be aware, and I just, you know, because if I don't make you aware now, and we do this, and you're not on board, then it's going to be an issue when we get to set. And Jamie said, I'm 100% in. You know, I want to do a superhero movie. My little daughter loves Spider-Man. That's I'm awesome. Doing this movie for her. Mm. And know what? Jamie was like the greatest guy in the world. He was such a great collaborator and such a great partner when we were doing this makeup and always in great spirits. The week we had to do full body on him and his double, because we did it at the same time. Usually makeup started about 4 a.m. every morning.
Wow.
And Jamie showed up and was in a great mood. And, you know, we put it on music, and we always played this game. The beginning of the day, we would talk about subjects, and then we would ponder them. Jamie's word, ponder. Let's ponder now. And then at cleanup time, we would talk about what we pondered about. and it was just so much fun. Jamie made it so much fun. And I remember they had an EPK session, you know, behind the scenes stuff, and they came into the trailer while I was doing Jamie's makeup, and they had asked us already. And Jamie said, I got a great idea. You interview me, Howard, and I interview you while we're doing the makeup. And I'm like, I'm totally in. And it's a friggin' awesome interview, because I'm asking Jamie questions about, you know, working on the film and all this, and Jamie's asking me questions about doing the makeup and how I came up. And basically we're interviewing each other for the EPK, and it was just like priceless. But that's the sort of guy Jamie Foxx is. Like, he's a great, great guy. And one of the questions I always get asked, which is I guess it's an obvious question, but it doesn't have an obvious answer, because people will say, oh man, yeah, you must work with some real difficult actors. And I'm like, I do not work with difficult actors. I work with great actors and great people. And I have to say, you know, in my career, and I wish I had counted how many actors I got to do makeups on, but I think there's like two people who I prefer not to work with again, because I just didn't feel like they were very cool and very nice. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, there's thousands that were so fantastic and so kind. You know, speaking about when I was talking about I Heart Huckabee, so I did these lactating breasts on Jude Law. And Dustin Hoffman was in the movie, and he came and he saw me, he loved them. He's like, I want those. I want a pair of breasts, lactating breasts. So we went to the director, David O. Russell, and said, you know, Dustin would like. He's like, yeah, that'll be great. So then I did a pair of lactating boobs on Dustin Hoffman, and I don't think it's in the movie, but Dustin had a really fun day that day. But it's stuff like that. It's like when you know, and it's interesting. A lot of actors I work with love makeup. They're like, if I wasn't an actor, I would definitely do this. You know, I wanted to go into makeup, or I love creatures, or, you know, all that stuff. And I'm always surprised, but not when I meet, you know, an actor who's like, oh yeah, I grew up loving, you know, Rick Baker, and I love the Universal Monsters, and I love Ray Harryhausen, and like Tom Hanks is a huge Ray Harryhausen fan. Huh. And you know, he says Jason and the Argonauts is the best movie ever made. And when Ray got his Lifetime Achievement Oscar, it was Tom Hanks who presented it. And I was working with Tom on Green Mile at the time, and he said it was by far one of the greatest experiences of his life to be able to give his idol, his childhood idol, an Academy Award.
That's amazing.
You know,
yeah.
So
crazy.
It is. It's super cool. And listen, I wake up every single day like so grateful I get to do this, and so happy I'm a part of the film industry, because I dreamed about it, and I always hoped I would get to do it. I never imagined it'd be to this extent, you know, of where I am today in my career and with my business and all that. But it's really like when you have a dream, it does all come true, you know, and your career becomes your hobby is your career, you know. And I still love it. I get up every morning and I can hardly wait to go to work, because I enjoy it so much. That's it's rare. Yeah, it's rare that it's a drudge, you know, like granted, there's been a couple movies I'm like, oh God, I'd rather just drive into a lake. But that didn't mean anything about what I was doing. It had to do with, like, I don't want to go see these production people. Like, it's usually the production people that annoy the shit out of me. So, but everybody else, I love seeing the actors. I love the actors to death. Because I always say that, I bring X amount to the creation of it. And the other half is up to the actor to bring it to life. And I can do a great makeup on an actor who doesn't bring it to life and it's a fail. But, normally I'll do a really nice makeup and a really great actor. You know, like I worked on that film Hitchcock with Anthony Hopkins, and we had a lot of talks about that. And I said, the first test I did, he looked just like Alfred Hitchcock. And Tony said, I don't even need to act. And I said, no, that's what I need you to do. You have to bring this to life now. And we ended up revising the makeup because I felt like it felt too much like Hitchcock, and I lost Tony in the makeup. And we did like 6 or 7 tests, which Tony agreed to do all of them. He was another guy who showed up at 6 a.m. for makeup tests once a week. And,
right.
And because usually production goes like, well, yeah, you can just do it on the double. I'm like, well, it's not a true test then, because it's not on the real guy, But Tony was such a dream to work with, and so collaborative as well. I mean, I just have so many great memories and experiences with getting to work with actors and great directors. And, I've had a really hell of a, if today was my last day in the industry, I have nothing to complain about.
No, you shouldn't. I mean, just between, achieving the highest honors and working on some of the most iconic films you can really think of. I mean, you should be proud when you wake up and think about the things you've done. So,
well, except for Michael Myers' nose.
Except for the nose. Yeah, but
yeah, except for the nose, right?
Yeah.
Are you able to before? Are you able to watch enjoy a movie, like take yourself out of it as the creator and the make? Are you able to just sit and enjoy?
Yeah, I am. It's sometimes it's difficult, but then nowadays I find like I don't really want to see films more than once. I watch a lot of the movies I grew up on. Last night I watched Rocky Horror Picture Show, which I loved. It's a really great film, and my wife had never seen it. Sometimes I have to really sit back and like make just enjoy the film, right. And I do. And then maybe the second time if I watch it, I'm like, okay, now I'm going to watch all my screw ups. So,
Yeah. Dive deep into it.
Yeah. It's so true. So true. So,
but
yeah, it's cool, man. I've had a great career. I'm super, super lucky. So
that's awesome. And this
I love movies. So I watch movies nonstop. Even when I'm working, I try to do at least like two, three movies a week, try to squish it in.
Nice. So, I mean, this is clearly the pinnacle of your career tonight. So,
it's been 2 years in the making, right?
That's true. And it was well worth it, man. And I really want to thank you for giving us our time. We could probably sit here and pick your brain for 4 hours, but we're gonna let you go. It's truly amazing the stuff you do and the creativity that goes along with it and the passion that you could hear through your voice just talking to you. Still coming through. Oh, so I want to thank you for the time and thank you for the interview.
Absolutely.
My pleasure. No, thank you. And in the future, if you guys ever want to talk again, let's do it. I would
love to have that gun.
Yeah, man. My pleasure. I'm sorry.
2022. Here we come.
Yeah. Boom. Let's do it.
Now, real quick, Howard, if anybody wants to go, two things. If anybody, what's the best place to go check your workout? I know you have your company, but I don't know if you have a social media that you prefer.
I do. I mean, I have my Instagram. There's also a K&B Instagram, but that needs to get updated. There's like, I feel like it's just like there's not enough stuff on there. So actually, I got to talk to Greg about that. I'll do that over this break. but they can go to my Instagram, which is hoops511 on Instagram. So hoops, HOOPS 511. And there's a bunch of cool stuff. And I don't always post monster stuff, but there's a lot of crazy shit. And I also, love photography, and I like a bunch of stuff. I'm all about funny things too. So
awesome.
To me, being a makeup effects guy is being a comedian as well, because we're so fucking weird,
Yeah.
You got to get out there and be wacky. And And we are. We're bizarre. We're the kids' parents told their kids to stay away from. You know, like, you don't want to go over there. Don't go play at Howard's house. That's a weird kid. He's a weird monster kid. You know?
And last thing, fans of yours, what are you working on and what can they expect next?
Let's see. What do we have? Well, season 10 of Walking Dead is on currently, which that's all Greg Nicotero. Greg is the king of Walking Dead, so I take no credit at all for that.
Yep.
I'm hoping this year, at the end of the year, the show I've been working on with Little Marvin is coming out. It's called Them. It's really cool. It's going to be on Amazon.
Okay, cool.
It's hardcore stuff, but it's really fantastic. The writing is spectacular. And the work we did is pretty good, too. I also have, what else do we have coming out?
Are you doing Space Jam 2?
Yeah, there you go. But that won't be out till 2021.
Okay. Well, so, it'll be here before you know it.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it will be. Yeah, believe me, it'll be here before you know. It'll be a perfect tie-in with the Olympics, actually.
I
department-headed Space Jam 2 with LeBron James. And that's awesome. That was super, super fun. Tons and tons of stuff in that movie. Really good experience. And then second season of Creepshow is going to start shooting as soon as we get back from the hiatus. And then I move on to the third season of Orville. Wow. As soon as we get back from the hiatus. So back with Seth MacFarlane, because I did season 1 and 2 and I did Ted 2 and Seth seems to like me and keeps asking me back. So we're going to go back and do the third season of Orville as well.
That's awesome. Howard, thanks so much, man. Stay safe out there in California. Take the time to, you know, take some downtime and appreciate stuff and, you know, keep the creative stuff going.
Yep, I hear you. So. I'm going to be creative. And all that good stuff. And you too, guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you, man.
You had nothing to say, Scott. I'm a little disappointed. I had to be ready with a question on the spot all the time. So.
You know what? Let me delete this file and get the Cheese Lady back. We'll put Cheese Lady Part 2. Today's episode was
hardening in my house. I can't get rid of it.
The Cheese Lady was supposed to... Howard Berger was supposed to be on, but due to popular demand, the Cheese Sculptor is back. So what you been working on during the quarantine? Oh, I've been carving cheese sticks and...
yeah. I can't send it anywhere, but, you know, they're in my house. I talk to them in the quarantine, so...
All I know is that... I know we've said it before, and it's a little bit tooting our own horn, but I don't really care. 2020 has been, like, just fantastic interview after fantastic interview. And this one, you know, it's going to be hard to top.
Yeah. I mean, amazing stories, a lot of detail. Absolutely loves his job. Absolutely fun to chat with. I mean, can't ask for a better person to chat with us.
Yeah. You know, you don't say that same passion about working for Verbal Shenanigans. I don't really know why.
Well, I mean, when you've done it as long as me, I mean, I already got my tenure, so you can't really do anything with me. You know? Right. You can't push me away. You're legally bound to call me at least every Monday to chat about some stuff. So it is what it is.
Gotcha. So you're kind of like in that stage of your career where you're just coasting, getting to the retirement fund?
Yeah. I figure when I can get that AARP card, I'm like, all right, now I'm done podcasting. I'm good enough.
I hate to tell you, Mike, due to the pandemic, the Verbal Shenanigans Retirement Fund, the 401k, completely bottomed out.
But I put it all on U.S. futures. Are you saying something got messed up?
Yeah, a little bit. Little bit of a, you know, a couple things dropped a little bit.
All right, I'm going to have to pick up a paper somewhere. I haven't heard anything, so...
But, yeah, go check out Howard Berger. I mean, if anything, if you see this interview, like, beforehand and, like, you just tuning in, like, just go look at his resume first. Like, I texted Mike before we interviewed him. I'm like, dude, did you really look through this guy's resume? It's like, you could spend an hour on each film, some of them. Like, Kill Bills and the Tarantino movies and, you know.
Didn't even dive into the Narnia where he got a freaking Oscar for God's sakes.
Oscar, we didn't talk about some of the Walking Dead effects. Like, you know, so he would go top to the list of someone I'd like to get back on. So the one and only Howard Berger. All right, Mike. I'm starting to think that guys like Howard are catching up to our resume, and I don't like it.
How so? How do you feel that way?
Well, I mean, we have this podcast with, like, you know, so many listeners, and we've interviewed so many people, and people come from all over the world just to talk to us and whatnot. I mean, this guy's resume is close to ours.
Hmm. I see what you mean. Yeah, yeah. But he never talked to a mustache champion, so we always got one up on him.
What?
He will never be a Gandhi Jones interviewer. Never.
What do you, the best is that we did that interview twice.
Yep. He's on the list of people we had to do twice. Him, the Rinster. Well, I forget her real
Rain
name.
Dove, Rain Dove.
Rain Dove, yep.
Yeah.
I think those were the three. Yeah.
Yeah.
Occasionally and those were the awkward kind of, oh, something happened. Can we try to do another natural conversation again?
Yeah. But yeah, Howard enters the running. You know, the guy won an Academy Award, Berlu. Possible this year he wins a Verbee.
Ooh. I mean, that's an impressive resume. I mean, he has an Oscar, an Emmy, but he'll keep on looking to the right just to see that green golden shamrock hanging on his fireplace mantle.
That would be absolutely awesome if we found a place, we, you know, put a little bit of money into making actual Verbees and sending them to the guests that get them.
Yeah. I think that'd be awesome. The drawback would be most of them would probably go, no, I'm not going to tell you where we live.
Yeah. No, I don't want my Verbee.
Donate it to charity. But we ran out of charities. Nobody wants them.
Yeah, you know how before you were talking about effects of the pandemic? There's one. He's going to be like, I'm not accepting any weirdo gift from podcasters, you know.
Where's this from? I don't know this address. What is this?
But yeah, Howard Berger, man. Really, really cool stuff. So one of the things I did want to talk about before we go, I mentioned it to Howard on the podcast. So I was approached the other day. This is kind of a crazy story. So do you remember when Facebook was just like colleges? You had to be part of a college to join Facebook. Like it was emails.
I wasn't on it when that occurred, but I am aware of the history of it.
Right. So when I joined Facebook, I was in college, and you had to when it first started, you had to find like a drop down menu of your school and then enter your school email. To this day, my Facebook is my old college email. And I'm just waiting for the day where I can't get into it. And they're like, and I have no idea how to access college
email.
So
it's sbrennan@ramapo.com?
Correct.
Close. Or EDU?
Really close. Yep.
Okay.
So back in the day, it was really fun to like, I mean, not really fun, but you would get on and you'd find other people with your name. So, like, Berlo would find, you'd go find another Michael Berlo and be like, oh, crap, like, oh, I'm going to follow him. And then you'd follow each other, like, oh, Michael Berlo, finding Michael Berlo. Oh, that's great, you know? So I had followed a Scott Brennan. And now, how long am I out of college? So 2006. Berlo, what is that? 2006. 14 years. So 14 years, yep. I'm out of college. So maybe this happened 16 years ago. Now, he's liked some of my stuff, like, over the years, like, on Instagram, or like, whatever. Like, just, like, liked. And I'm like, oh, that's funny, Scott Brennan liked my video or whatever. And so I got a message the other day, and it's funny because I was on a Zoom call, we were talking about that, with a bunch of my friends. We decided to do a Zoom happy hour, if you will, just to say hi to each other and have a drink and talk to each other. It was kind of fun, actually, not going to lie. And I start getting the message, and I get this message. She's like, hey, man, would you be interested in doing a comedy show, a Zoom comedy show for my company? And immediately I'm like, no. No. As much as you, maybe guys who don't do comedy or never done comedy or been to a comedy show, the key element to comedy is the audience. I'm going to let you in on a little secret. Okay.
Like, funny story. I mean, granted, I've been out for a while, but I still know Jersey comedians where I'm like, they're probably like, do I?
Yeah, that is
like their niche. They probably like get flyers and all tonight on Zoom.
Yeah. And that's really just not me. I don't know. Feels a little awkward.
Yeah.
But I said to him, I was honest with him. I said, dude, it's a really hard sell. Like, it's not now. Comedy really needs an audience and whatnot. I said, I could put something together for you, but I really need my comics to get paid for it. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, don't make it like a show, like an hour and a half or whatever. I said, keep it shorter. 45 minutes max, something like that. Okay? Because people's attention spans, not live, I can't even imagine. Like, they're probably really short.
Yeah.
So I said, look, I need my comics to make X amount of money. And I said, I don't want to do like host, feature, headliner kind of thing. I said, I want to do like five comics doing like 10 minutes each. Because I think attention span wise, I could listen to you for 10 minutes, even if it's horrific. And move on to the next comic, whatever. Maybe something makes me laugh. I feel really bad throwing, here's your headliner doing 45 minutes on Zoom. You know, that's atrocious. You know?
You imagine I'm trying to do like crowd play and everybody's like trying to click on everybody's bubbles and all. I don't see what's in the background. I don't.
So thinking that it wasn't going to happen, I gave him the info and I said, look, I can get you comics. I can get you comics I trust that kill all over the place that are fantastic comics because that's what I do. You know, like that's what I've done for a long time. I said, but I can't guarantee anything else. I can't guarantee you it's going to be this amazing time for your employees. I said, all I can guarantee is that we will try and I will bring comics that are experienced and will do their best. Sure enough, no, it's no problem, man. Like, let me check with my boss, whatever. And I'm like, yeah, this is going to. Next morning, hey. And now I had a couple beers with my friends the night before. And I'm like, The morning comes. He's like, hey, it's Scott Brennan.
Is it me for the
picture? Was I talking to myself again last night? Damn it. Tequila always does that to me. No. So he's like, yeah, boss approves. We can get you this amount of money. We want to do it next Thursday. I'm like, oh, God. So in a way, I'm like, crap. Like, I don't want to do this. But in a way, I started to kind of change my mindset and say, you know what? You go on for 10 minutes, and if you bomb, I don't know. As a comic, I've done a million shower shows to myself. I rehearse my material in the shower. You know what I mean? Like, all the time. Alex has caught me a million times, like, saying jokes out loud in the shower. These other comics, I could get them a decent paycheck. They're not doing comedy for another 2 months at least. Like, I can give them some money. Okay?
Yeah.
For 10 to 12 minutes. That's all I'm asking them. I'm like, you know what? Let's approach this in a positive atmosphere. Let's say, this might suck, but let's, like, go through the suck together. You know?
That's what you say every week when we start this podcast.
Right. Right. Mike, this might suck, but let's get through the next 90 minutes here. Yeah. Come on. Bear down.
We'll get through the suck together.
283 episodes. No money, but we do it anyway. So I went out and messaged. I messaged five comedians. And four of them were in. One was like, I'll do the second show. He's like, do it. Yeah. So this Thursday, I will have to report back next week. Now this goes. This will be the first ever Verbal Shenanigans Zoom.
Virtual show.
I'm going to do it. It's an hour show. Five comics. I'm just going to kind of host. And my fears are everything you would fear from doing a virtual show. I'm just going to try to. So what I want to tell him, I have a meeting tomorrow with the guy. I want to tell him I want everybody's mics on. I want to encourage no talking or whatever, like to their your spouses or whatever. And I want to encourage the cameras to be on. And I think what I'm actually going to do is do it from my basement. I think I'm going to set up like a little wall, and I'm going to put lights and like the mic stand and everything like that, and maybe even the banner and whatnot, and just go for it. Host it. And I want to host and be like, hey, your next comic coming to stage. And then like, hopefully they're, I got to find out on the Zoom controls if someone can control what everybody else sees. But I don't
be
know.
Great
man.
If you said coming to the stage and you just brought up like a second laptop and put it in front of camera.
Just keep putting more laptops in front. So I don't know, man. I have a lot of anxiety about it, but I also have like this weird, if this is going to be the state of comedy right now, we might as well give it a try.
Well, it doesn't hurt. I mean, you get through this, then you can literally say to yourself, how awkward can a regular show ever be under any circumstances, right? Number one. Number two, I would say ham it like you have never hammed anything before. I would literally recommend like having canned laughter with you, like like the belly laugh and then like the mid laugh and then even like a couple, like a boo wave file. You know, the way you know. I mean, literally, just keep on cranking that thing.
I might,
because it's just gonna, like, the oddness of it, I think, will just entice people to just dive into this weird concept.
Well, Burl, that was my next question. You want to be my my can laughter boo guy?
Oh,
Burl, you want me to Burl, can you stop hitting the boo button? I'm trying to.
The key's stuck, Scott. There's nothing I can do. Hey, just keep doing your set.
It's a health care company, too. Hey, guys, how you doing out there? Boo. I didn't even start yet.
Sorry, I'm working out the kink, Scotty. I think this is a cow noise. Let me check.
But, I mean, the way I saw it, it was an opportunity. And I am taking 1/5 of the pay for the show. I'm paying it among 5 comics all equally. Mm-hmm. And the way I saw it is like, I can get my comics a couple bucks and you might not be doing comedy till July, you know, like,
easily,
you know? So, and I was like, you know, I'm going to approach this head on and take it on and try to push through it. Like maybe this goes well and I'm able to get one of these a week somewhere, somehow. I don't know.
Why not? And, you know, I mean, how many people are really truly diving into it? I mean, I've heard people saying how much, no, it can't work. It's a different concept. You make it work. It's your business.
Yeah. All of a sudden, maybe like, wow, I can't do our monthly shows. Maybe this is something, you know, I don't know. No.
Well, what you do is you get a camera at Tap House 15 and you just say live
funny,
from there.
Funny. I thought about doing it for them and just being like, hey, I don't know, I'll get a comic or two. Like maybe we could broadcast from Tap House's Facebook or something like that. I don't know. But so I'm stressing out about it a little bit, but I'm also like kind of optimistic. So, hey, you never know. I'll report back next week on it. That's for sure. Yeah.
Literally going into this, literally, this is the definition of what's the worst that can happen. Well, there is nobody going into that saying success. Mm-hmm. So you have to just laugh your ass off going into it, ham it up, and something crazy might happen.
Yeah. And I figure, hey, maybe they like it and they'll say, hey, well, can we do this again in 2 weeks? You know, get a new lineup? You know, who knows? Yeah. So I was able to get the comics I needed, and it's very, I don't know. Like I said, it's going to be a good story for the podcast anyway next week. So, Burlow, on that note, I think it's time for us to skedaddle here.
All right. That sounds good, Scotty.
But another, I don't know. It's another great episode in the books. And again, with this whole thing going on, I find the appreciation for this going up and up and up, because it's like, hey, I could still do this. It's something we can still do and be creative and talk to people and feel
speak
normal.
Speak out to us, people. We're all in this together. If you got ideas or you want us to chat about stuff, you know, contact us, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Let us know What's on your mind?
I mean, also, guys, go check out like two episodes ago where we had a true crime open murder case on our podcast. It's been a lot of cool stuff going on in the podcast this year, so go check it out. Berlo, anything to promote before we go?
I'll go back into promoting local businesses. I'm going to promote a friend in Red Bank, New Jersey. They own a bagel shop. It's called the Bagel Oven. They have delicious bagels there. They have breakfast sandwiches. During lunchtime, they have deli sandwiches. I know everybody's going through a tough time with small business with everything going on, but we all got to try to help out in whatever we can. So it's the Bagel Oven. They're on Monmouth Street in Red Bank, New Jersey.
Awesome. And I will promote once again. It's kind of interesting because the other day I heard these two guys doing their podcast, and I listened to the first couple of episodes, tuned in, and I said, something's wrong with the audio. And I was like, dude, I think you're they had mics set up and whatever, and I think they were recording with the computer mic rather than the actual microphones. I know it sounds boring to you guys. So I said, I think this is what's going on, guys. Like, I just want to help you out. Sure enough, it was, and now their podcast sounds great. And his good friend of the show, Mike Ciccoli, and a friend of the show, John Kirshner, they do a brand new podcast called That's My Time. And they gave us a little shout-out in the last episode for kind of helping them out with the audio. So go check that podcast out. Very funny, guys. And I will say, Berlo, I will give you the lineup for the first ever Verbal Shenanigans comedy show. You tell me what you think, okay?
Virtual Shenanigans.
Virtual. Oh, perfect.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Well, that's why we pay you the big money here. So on the first Virtual Shenanigans show, in your hosting spot will be the one and only Scott Brennan.
The guy named like you. That's right. Awesome. My favorite Scott Brennan of all time. Mm-hmm. Good start. Good start.
Okay. Coming out in the batting leadoff is Mike Ciccoli.
Oh, very talented guy. Yeah.
Very funny.
Loved his stand-up.
Just promoted. Hitting in the second hole. You know, big on base percentage, hits for average. Usually that's your second hole. And the one and only, Miss Jackie Byrne.
She always tears it down. She's a girl, goes to any place, she'll figure it out. People love her all the time.
She also married me and my wife, so that was pretty cool. Hitting in the third spot, which, you know, that's the spot you really want to put some numbers up, hit some home runs, who is also headlines all over the place. The one and only Mr. Kevin Israel.
Talented again. We got a solid three. Mm-hmm. Now I got to hear this cleanup hitter, Scott.
All right. And cleaning up for the Virtual Shenanigans show, headliner, good friend of the show. We've had him on here before. We actually went and did his show before. He's been doing drinks and storytelling podcast. He's just a really funny guy. Mr. Mark Riccadonna.
Always a pleasure. Yeah. No, I went out of my way when he was down here in Georgia to go see him.
Did you?
Down here. Yeah. Yep.
Good dude. So, Berlo, you could attest that we're bringing the heat for the first ever Virtual Shenanigans comedy show. So there will be stuff to talk about next week, that's for sure. So guys, that's it for us. I want to thank Howard Berger, really one of my favorite interviews to date, and we've had a lot of them. And what you can do for us is please follow the podcast. Please leave a review on iTunes. Please share it with your friends. I think this is a good episode if you're just diving in now to really say, hey, this is cool. Like, check these guys out. And that's it. We're on a bunch of internet radio places. Not really going to get into that right now. Most of all, guys, stay safe. Stay inside. Like I said, this thing has hit kind of close to home to me. I mean, I'm in New Jersey. It's all over the place. But three or four people I know or have met or one degree away from have it. So stay inside. Listen to podcasts. Write, create, paint. Do something interesting. Go for a run. Go for a walk. Walk the dog. But thank you guys for listening and tuning in.
Thank you, everybody.
Life is funny, people. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Peace out.
Later.